Thank you very much. It's nice to be with you today, and I just wanted to caution everyone to make sure to turn off your cell phones. You never know when you're going to get a call from Rudy's wife. Politics in the Middle East. I've been waiting for something that seems to happen almost every 4 years, and that is for the various presidential candidates to promise to move the U.S. Embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. This has been a staple. The last several presidents have just about all of them have promised to do it. The embassy never seems to move. So there's certainly a kind of ritualistic quality to that. So far, we haven't seen that that issue addressed. But we have heard a lot, as Bob says, about the Middle East, and we're hearing quite different things, I think, from the candidates of the two parties. Among the Republicans, we have heard at least John McCain is making a big political asset in the Republican parties over his longstanding support for the kind of surge strategy which President Bush ordered into effect a year and a day ago. That's also been the same general line, I think, is being taken by Rudy Giuliani and Fred Thompson that we should aggressively seek victory and success in Iraq, and that's possible. Mitt Romney has tended to take the same line, although he got nicked for saying in a debate in September that the surge seemed to be working so far. They seem to take also, those three candidates, perhaps four, to be taking a posture towards the Arab, towards Palestinian / Israeli issues that is similar to what President Bush has been taking, or at least was taking in his first term, which I take to be we don't negotiate with terrorists and don't put heavy pressure on Israel to make concessions to Palestinians if the Palestinians do not renounce their goal of destroying Israel. They have been maintaining that we are not going to allow Iran to get nuclear weapons. How precisely we're not going to allow them is unclear, but they, and I think Hillary Clinton and other Democrats have made the same statement, quote, not ruling out any options. The one difference Republican on these issues is Mike Huckabee, the former governor of Arkansas, whose article in Foreign Affairs denounced the arrogant bunker mentality of the Bush administration. Not a tone taken by the other Republican candidates. And he compared the United States and Iran to siblings who are not on speaking terms with each other. We should stop this feud with our sibling and make up and talk and see if we can get somewhere. Huckabee seems to be making policy without a lot of immersion or exposure to different arguments. He adopted his backing of the so-called fair tax after reading one book and without consulting much in the way of other experts. On foreign policy, he seems also to be shooting or negotiating from the hip. But I think he clearly, that's a different policy. It's one that probably is a liability with Republican primary voters and caucus goers, but it does have a different policy. I suppose I should also mention Ron Paul, the eccentric 10-term congressman from Texas, although he's not, in my view, anything like a serious candidate. The Democrats have struck a different tone. In the first 6 months of this year, certainly, they have been sort of battling with each other as to who's sorry that they voted for the Iraq War resolution in October 2002, or proud that they spoke out or voted against it. You've had Hillary Clinton has been excoriated by John Edwards for not apologizing for her vote, as Edwards apologized for his. We've heard less from the Democrats in recent months as it's become apparent that the surge strategy has achieved considerable success. They were asked about it in the debate last Saturday night, and what we got were sort of formulaic responses saying that, well, the surge is not successful because the aim was to get political political reconciliation and benchmark bills passed by the Iraqi parliament. Since they haven't been able to pass these things in the parliament, the thing is still a failure. I think that obviously ignores what's happening on the ground there. I'm not sure if that's a position that they can credibly sustain over the next 11 months. Of course, much depends on results of the situation in Iraq. I noted that the Democratic candidates were taken to task on this issue by the editorial pages not only of the Wall Street Journal but also of the Washington Post, who basically said, look, you have to recognize reality, and you can't just blink and pretend it's not so. I don't expect them to follow the advice of those editorials, at least in the primary season, because there's a very large part of the Democratic constituency which is shrieking mad about Iraq, which mad in the sense of angry, which is reluctant to believe that anything good could possibly be happening there. And really tries to shut out any evidence of it. It's the Nancy Boyda effect. Nancy Boyda is a freshman congresswoman from the 2nd District of Kansas. And when General Petraeus was testifying before the committee on which she serves in September, she bolted from the room and said, I can't bear to hear this anymore, this good news. It's settled that Iraq was a complete disaster. She was unwilling to listen to it, and it was an interesting and revealing moment, which I think reveals a lot about a lot of Democratic voters. Certainly none of these candidates want to defy them in the primary period. The possibility is that I think there exists a possibility, by no means a certainty, that in a general election setting, a Republican nominee like John McCain, whom we've heard talk eloquently about the surge, will say, look, I produced what was a winning strategy over there. We would have had disaster if we had followed your advice. We'll see if that comes to pass. Perhaps some of the Democrats will take perhaps a different line once they're nominated. On the Israel-Palestinian issues, I think we can expect Hillary Clinton to follow policies much like her husband's. Barack Obama, I think, has to be regarded as something of a mystery here. He's made statements about being willing to sit down any time with the leaders of Iran and Syria. He seems certainly to favor negotiation-type mold. We don't know to what extent he would be willing to pressure Israel to make concessions to the Palestinians. I would guess a fair lot, but I don't know that. I think we've been hearing comments in some quarters that the fact that his father was a Muslim might have a positive effect on young Muslims around the world. They say, this guy has got something in common with us. You can take another view of this, however. As Daniel Pipes has written, apparently, as a child, Obama attended prayers at mosques in Indonesia with his Indonesian stepfather. And Pipes says that for some Muslims, at least, that would make him, now that he is a Christian, an apostate who ought to be murdered. That's a chilling thought and one that we don't like to entertain. But the fact is, I think that it's naive of us to expect that the hearts of Muslims around the world are going to be warmed by having somebody who they regard as a former Muslim as President of the United States. Let me just say a few words about the role of the Jewish vote, as we used to call it in the elections. Every 4 years, the proposal to move the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem would come out during the weeks preceding the New York primary. Going through the five boroughs of New York and the suburbs and so forth, you'd be hearing that from the candidates. We haven't seen very much of that now, and I don't think we necessarily will in the fall. One reason is that Jewish voters are in a different place on Israel today from where they were 20 or 40 years ago. It's a younger electorate. They are more concerned, typically, I describe them in terms of Israeli politics, as much more Labor than Likud. They are typically more concerned about upholding liberal positions on cultural issues and opposing the religious right, which they see as a kind of as a threat to them. In addition, in the primary season, we're going to see states with large, conspicuous Jewish populations voting on Florida on January 29th, and in the big states, in some of the big states, voting on February 5th, New York, New Jersey, Illinois, California. I think that, most Jewish voters are registered in the Democratic Party. Some of these states are not going to be seriously contested. New York and New Jersey will be conceded to Hillary Clinton, Illinois to Obama. I'm not sure that we're going to see a great deal of focus on Israel/Palestinian issues by the Democrats in the run-up to those contests. They're going to have a limited period of time. They're going to have limited amounts of issues that they can stress in advertising. We'll see if that sort of thing comes up on debates. As for the Republicans, very few Jews are registered Republicans. It's almost like black Republicans. Someone asked me one time if I knew any black Republicans. I said, I know all the black Republicans. In any case, the constituency in the Republican primary electorate that I think is most pro-Israel is evangelical Christians, or at least some large part of the evangelical Christian constituency, who in many ways are perhaps also in the general election a larger pro-Israel constituency than American Jews, who form about 2% of the electorate today as compared to 4% in 1940, a declining segment of the electorate. Ultimately, how will these issues play out in November? Well, I gave you some speculation earlier about the Iraq issue. Obviously, that depends on events on the ground. The Iran issue may come up. As I mentioned, the Democratic candidates as well as the Republican candidates have said, I'm not ruling anything out there. I think there could be a significant contrast on Israel/Palestinian issues, with the Democrats favoring more in the way of negotiation, or Republicans arguing that you should not negotiate with terrorists who are trying to destroy your society and to extirpate your country. So I think those are the things that we can look forward to in the fall. People ask me who's going to win the election. I'll leave that. No, the answer is I don't know. We're seeing an interesting contest between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, which may come to conclusion on February 5th, when more than half the country will have voted. We will have to see. I mean, in the weeks to come, it seems to me that Obama probably has the advantage in the Nevada caucuses, with the big unions there endorsing him, and in South Carolina, where about half the voters will be black, and they're now supporting Obama heavily. The white voters are split pretty much evenly between Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and John Edwards. So I think John Edwards is functionally out of the race. It's interesting that when you see polls that say 30% of South Carolina whites support a black candidate for president, at least whites in the Democratic primary. Boy, for those of us who go back some ways in American politics, that is a momentous and encouraging change, at least in the abstract, without regard to Obama. As for the Republicans, a few weeks ago I said there were 60 scenarios for the Republican nomination fight. I think that has fallen to about 52 after Iowa and 44 after New Hampshire. You've got five candidates who have substantial support. If you look at the national polling, they're all sort of within the 10 to 20% version. I think any of these candidates has a chance to win the Republican nomination, some more than others, and that we're going to see what happens. I mean, Fred Thompson speculation that he was going to drop out after Iowa. Now he had a good debate performance on the Fox News debate last night, and he may do well in South Carolina. We'll have to revise and extend our predictions once again. But I think that's a real indeterminate thing. The outcome in November, I think we're in a period of what I call open field politics. I think there's a wide range of outcomes. When you ask voters which party's candidate they want to vote for, they want to win the presidency, they favor Democrats by 49-36. A poll earlier this year, Fox News asked which of two specific candidates would do the best job of protecting the nation. Came in Rudy 50, Hillary 36, which is almost precisely the reversal of those numbers. If you look at McCain versus Obama, recent polls are 45-45. All those numbers suggest to me that there's a wide range of outcomes, that the issues have not been well defined by any of the candidates of either party, and that the discussion and debate on where the country should go and what kind of change we should embrace has not yet taken place, and that there are many, many possibilities open. Thank you.